A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights are probably gone.
So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 68. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of Edge of Darkness. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. So yes, we're getting back to our talk about Edge of Darkness, a 1985 BBC miniseries, 6 episodes, each about 50 minutes long. An interesting show that combined a detective story. So we have this very determined and grief-stricken detective who's hunting the murderers of his daughter. We've got a political conspiracy, the thriller elements that go with that. And we've got some very dodgy goings on in the British nuclear industry that may link everything together.
The corridors of power, both in the nuclear industry and the private sector and also in the government, are very shadowy indeed in Edge of Darkness.
Yes, there's some very sort of dubious and dirty goings on in the corridors of power. And we literally see them because we're literally taken into Westminster and see some of the committee rooms and so on.
And there is not a lot in the way of science fiction elements in this, but I believe there are some, largely in the last episode. And it's a very interesting serial, and it relates to science fiction drama of the time quite a bit, I think. So it is something that we wanted to cover.
Yes, and it's also interesting because it was a listener suggestion for us. So another good reason for us to cover it.
Absolutely.
So back to the plot and the story.
Yes, we have Ronnie Craven, the protagonist, continuing to investigate the murder of his daughter Emma. He finds out more about her involvement with this group Gaia and a break-in, apparently, at a nuclear waste facility that a bunch of students were involved in. And apparently, Emma may have been involved in as well. And he makes contact with various spies or people who are involved in intelligence and strange things in government in one way or another. In particular with Pendleton and Harcourt, who are these British intelligence analysis types of people who tend to stay in the shadows and don't get directly involved very much. And also he's getting involved with an American CIA agent, Darius Jedberg, who is very much getting his hands dirty and getting involved in things. And we start hearing about the boss or the head of this waste processing firm in the UK, Bennett, who is involved in what's going on at this facility and how things are being dealt with nuclear waste. And then an American billionaire, Grogan, who is potentially taking this company over and getting involved with these things with the nuclear industry and nuclear power, nuclear waste, maybe nuclear weapons, and some strange and potentially very high technology, futuristic types of things being looked at there. And Craven, of course, throughout this, is stricken by grief. And as we mentioned earlier in the previous episode, we get this very strong performance from Bob Peck as Craven, who is completely grief-stricken, and he is really not looking for revenge. He is looking for answers, for closure, for catharsis. He wants to know what has happened here and how his daughter was involved, why she died, and get through this.
Yeah, and it is, I mean, we keep saying it, but it's a fantastically moving performance by Peck. As he seeks for the answers and he finds things he didn't know about his own daughter which puzzle and alarm him. It's a great piece of television, really, because you don't, or at least in the 80s, I don't think we often saw such a powerful portrayal of grief.
It was quite remarkable.
Yeah. And meanwhile, while all that's going on, we have trains carrying very mysterious containers through the night. which we keep seeing shots of. And in fact, I think the first two episodes both end with these trains carrying these unusual large metal boxes through the night while we hear Eric Clapton's guitar music theme playing. So, you know, quite striking and interesting moments, which perhaps don't get fully explained in a way, although it sort of builds up the mystery and the idea that there's something going on. And then Craven will have to continue on his investigations, and he'll have to leave his home of Yorkshire and move to travel down to London, where he will be literally almost dragged into the corridors of power and get involved in inquiries in committee rooms in Westminster. Meanwhile, he's continuing his own investigations, so there'll be some very 1980s-style computer hacking as he tries to find out some of the secrets that British intelligence seems to have. And he realises, I think, that he's going to have to learn the truth of what happened to Emma. He's going to have to, in a way, retrace her steps, quite possibly, which will lead him on a very sort of dark and dangerous path, put him in harm's way.
And Craven is seeing and hearing his daughter, his dead daughter. And it's ambiguous as to whether this is some kind of ghost, some kind of supernatural or fantasy, even science fiction type of thing that is a real phenomenon that he's seeing, or if it's really just all in his mind. And that's something that's really never made clear. But we do know that Craven's wife, Emma's mother, died when Emma was quite young. And this is something that is also, although not in the same way, it's also haunting Craven. So we get this idea that he is utterly alone, having lost his wife years earlier and then finally lost his daughter. This is his struggle and his grief dealing with these things.
Absolutely. Yes, as you say, the death of Emma's mother when she was so young led them to have a very, I think Emma and Craven have a very sort of powerful and sort of strong relationship. And so when Emma's taken from him, it just becomes almost unbearable. And as you say, there are these various sort of mystical elements that crop up through Edge of Darkness. And one of them is the appearance of Emma to Craven and the ambiguous nature of it. And they filmed them very well. It's very interesting because they have moments where Craven is walking alone down a street and he'll pass behind a parked car and suddenly, without the camera cutting away, suddenly Emma is walking beside him and talking to him. And then perhaps a bit further down the street, they'll repeat the same trick and she'll disappear. So all very neatly done and quite good television.
That was used very effectively.
And then there's these other sort of mystical moments or mystical elements going on. We've got the Gaia theory of Earth, the idea that Earth itself may be an organism and that it may be preparing for the conflict with a nuclear-powered mankind. And we get something about these strange black flowers and the significance of those in the light of the coming struggle. So perhaps, again, a bit like another show we discussed, Artemis 81, there's these unusual flowers which may or may not be significant.
That's true. There is definitely the idea in Edge of Darkness, though, that there is something that is starting to happen, symbolized by these black flowers, of the Earth fighting against humanity and what humanity has become, and nuclear power and nuclear energy. So this idea that the Earth will fight back, and man versus nature in the end will win, or maybe man will win. There are different opinions there, but you get this strong idea that there will be this strange battle between nature and humanity, and the things like the black flowers being that nature will cleanse itself and the Earth will basically wipe out all traces of man so evolution can start again. Or maybe all traces of most life so evolution can start again. But this is a definite theme there, and there's quite a bit of this in the final episode. This idea of the Earth reaching out to combat man and to combat the nuclear presence. And this is something that I think tied into the politics and the fears of the time in 1985 of nuclear waste and nuclear energy and nuclear war.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it was very much of its time in a way, tapped into that fear, those fears that were going on. And one other mystical element just to mention is perhaps Darius Jedburgh again, this fantastic rogue CIA agent who, as you say, Brian, is very much a sort of loose cannon who literally gets his hands dirty and, in fact, bloody in places. But Jedburgh believes there is a conflict coming, and that it's a conflict between the forces of light and darkness. And he very much sees himself, despite his slightly dodgy past, he very much sees himself as one of the good guys. And I don't know how much of it comes out in the series, but in sort of Troy Kennedy Martin's notes, he clearly intended Jedburgh as some sort of spiritual knight in a way. And maybe even Craven was some form of knight or protector of the Earth as well.
That's right. There were definitely ideas of that. And also, as you get into the characters of Bennett and Grogan, who aren't really part of things in the beginning and become more significant towards the end of it. This is as we're peeling away layers and getting deeper into the corridors of power. We learn some of the things that they're planning, which tend towards some more science fiction ideas of advanced nuclear technologies and doing some highly military things and taking ideas from the Ronald Reagan Star Wars program and from the original 1983 Reagan speech about that. And this is sort of the group behind the scenes, military, commercial, talking about going a step beyond and a step beyond and another step beyond the things that had been talked about with Star Wars. And while they weren't a huge part of it, I think that was sort of an interesting sci-fi sort of twist in there that was thrown in as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it does get very specifically referenced, doesn't it, and quoted throughout the show.
Is this where she died?
It was over there. We were standing here. He stepped forward, shouting my name.
Is this dream a permanent feature?
No. It's new.
Oh, Jephthah, son of Israel. What a treasure hadst thou. What treasure had he, my lord? Why, one fine daughter and no more.
Now, the reaction to Edge of Darkness is something that we really have to talk about because it was quite phenomenal. It was very popular on its original broadcast in November and December of 1985, which was on BBC Two. It averaged 4 million viewers, and I believe this was a fairly late time slot, so 4 million was quite high.
Yeah, I think so. And yes, as you say, because it was after 9 o'clock at night, because it was quite sort of strong and dark stuff in places, but it was a good audience for BBC Two. And also got a very good critical response, so much so that the director of the BBC ordered a fairly speedy rerun. So just before Christmas 1985, it moved to BBC One, which, as we've said, is always the mark of a successful show when it jumps from BBC Two to BBC One, which, of course, more recently Torchwood has done.
That's right.
And it was shown on three consecutive nights just before Christmas, so they sort of doubled up the episodes. They did three double episodes for the rerun.
When you look at the extras on the DVDs and things like that, you can tell that at the time when this came out and shortly after, there was a lot of buzz about this show. It was something that that became a part of public consciousness. It was quite well known at the time. And it was something that all of these different TV shows that covered things that were happening in the media, all of them talked about this show.
Absolutely. As you say, there are several clips on the DVD extras of current affairs shows and chat shows and TV media shows talking about Edge of Darkness. As you say, that it generated a big buzz on television. And as you've also said, Brian, it also, I think, it tapped into that mid-80s fear that we had of nuclear power and nuclear war and political conspiracies and things going wrong. And it's interesting that this was broadcast in late 1985, and two other shows that we've discussed in the past, Threads, had been shown in 1984 on the BBC. And in fact, in 1985, the BBC finally broadcast the film The War Game, which we also discussed, two other shows about nuclear disasters. So it's quite, you know, obviously a lot of fear and concern at the time, and it tapped into that.
These were big issues at the time. The ideas of nuclear power, nuclear waste, nuclear weapons, and what the implications are, those were really big ideas and big issues in the public consciousness at the time. And Edge of Darkness went on to win 6 television awards at the BAFTAs, the British Academy Awards for Film and TV. And it was a number of years later, it was repeated in 1992 as well. But it stood as something that was quite well known and very highly regarded.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's still very highly regarded as one of the sort of prime pieces of British television. And in so much so that when the British Film Institute did their 100 greatest British television shows, Edge of Darkness placed 15th. And I think the only other sort of genre show that we've covered in British Invaders that placed higher was in fact just Doctor Who, which was 3rd on the BFI list. And so next on the list was Edge of Darkness at 15.
Interesting. Do you know what number 1 and number 2 were?
I thought you'd ask me that.
Aha!
Fawlty Towers and Kathy Come Home. There you go.
Wow. Okay. Interesting choices. Now, this was popular. It was well known. There have been a couple of spin-off type materials on this. The music, as we mentioned, was very successful. There was a release both as a single and as an LP by Eric Clapton with Michael Kamen. And that did very well in the pop sales at the time.
It did, yes. I mean, the single was in the charts and did very well. Very successful. Fantastic piece of music. Troy Kennedy Martin, the writer of the series, released a script book, which included some accompanying notes about the making of the series, and I think also comments from various scientists and political experts on some of the accuracy of some of the issues that were covered in the show. And that is still out there. You can pick up secondhand copies of that, I believe, on Amazon and so on.
That could be an interesting read.
Yep.
There is also, very recently, a movie, a 2010 remake with Martin Campbell once again directing Edge of Darkness, and it stars Mel Gibson and Ray Winstone taking on the roles of Craven and Jedburgh. And as we're recording, this just opened a couple of months ago, and I have not had the chance to see it yet, so there isn't a lot that I can say about it, except that from the trailer and from things that we've heard, it sounded like they were moving it a little more in the direction of an action film or maybe a revenge film, which is definitely not what the original was.
Yeah, maybe so. Again, I haven't had a chance to see it. I tried to go and see this in the cinema, and unfortunately it disappeared very quickly from local screens, so perhaps wasn't a huge success. And yes, we do believe that it was, you know, a lot of the stuff that was in the original show had to be cut out to reduce nearly 6 hours of television down to a 2-hour movie.
It sounds like it was not very successful commercially and not a great critical success either. There haven't been that many reviews of it that I've seen, but it sounds like it hasn't done all that well.
Okay, but if you were a fan of the original TV show and have seen the recent Mel Gibson movie, then please either put something up on Facebook or maybe consider recording an MP3 clip for us, and we might bring that into a future bonus show.
Absolutely. Or if you send us an email and just write out what you thought about it, then we would certainly appreciate that and use that in the bonus show as well.
So, Brian, we should get to the good bits and the bad bits of Edge of Darkness on the BBC in the 1980s. How would you kick us off?
Well, there is a lot of good stuff that this serial had to offer. Bob Peck and Joe Don Baker both put in fantastic performances. Bob Peck, especially with the grieving and everything he was going through, but Joe Don Baker, perfectly cast, also had a very solid performance there. And there were lots of good performances in this. They were good across the board, but those two really hit it out of the park.
Absolutely. I mean, it's an astonishing partnership. As you say, I don't think there's a bad performance in the whole show. But Bob Peck and Joe Don Baker are just sensational. And whenever, you know, Joe Don Baker turns up as Darius Jedburgh, it's just fantastic fun in a way, because he's such a larger than life character. Very much the loose cannon, the rogue agent, who's having great fun and who believes that he's on the side of good because he plays golf and golf is a spiritual game.
And then you have characters like Pendleton and Harcourt, who show up and inject that little bit of humor without overdoing it and with having a very serious side to things as well, and giving you some of that dark tone to things while they're giving a bit of humor as well, which, again, you know, this could have been something that just wouldn't work, but those actors could bring it off.
Yeah, they do it very well, because as you say, they're not terribly, you know, nice characters. They are dark and manipulative, but they do have a certain strange humor to them, in the way that, you know, sometimes these pairings do, I suppose. So that is good. We've got some other performances that we should mention, again, from the large cast. We've got Zoe Wanamaker, turns up briefly, who we've previously mentioned on Gormenghast.
She doesn't have excessive makeup in this one, though.
No, no. And then we've also got Tim McInerney, who you might recognise from the Blackadder television show, and who's recently been in the new Doctor Who. And here he is, very young, playing the boyfriend that Craven discovers that Emma had, in a very sort of brief role, but an important one. And it's interesting to see him on screen as well. Another good performance.
Yes, and the script, the writing in this, the story, are really very good. It's complex, it's involved, it's deeply layered, and it's quite gripping. It really keeps you involved and works very well. I was very satisfied with the story that was told and how it was told, and I really didn't feel let down at any point in a nearly 6-hour drama, which is an accomplishment.
Yeah, Troy Kennedy Martin's writing is fantastic, and he's a very important writer in the history of British television as well. Sadly, no longer with us, because he died a few months ago, before he got to see Edge of Darkness being remade as a movie. But, you know, fantastic writing on Edge of Darkness. It's a very interesting script and lots of big themes. And it's complicated. It's quite sort of dense, hard stuff in a way, Brian, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a lot going on.
So what did you think about the negative side? Was there anything that disappointed you in Edge of Darkness?
Do you know, Brian, I really don't think there is. I struggle to think of any bad points about this series, and there aren't any for me. I mean, it may be almost too complex that it's difficult to know what is going on. And it's a series, I suppose, that doesn't answer all the questions. We still have questions left at the end of the show when we're not quite sure what was happening. But I think that's a good thing, that it makes you think about some of these issues.
Absolutely. I think most of the things that you could describe as being negative are very much a matter of taste. So I enjoy this type of layered, complex storytelling and complex drama. And I also enjoy something that doesn't give you all of the answers immediately and doesn't give you all of the answers altogether. I like that bit of mystery and bit of ambiguity. And that was quite well done in this. It is something that people who are not interested in that and want to see everything explained fully or want to see something a little less complex may be disappointed with, but it's something that I certainly thought was well done.
Yeah. I mean, as you said, there's the ambiguous nature of Emma appearing to her father, and that's never explained, and that's left to us to try and figure out what's happening there. And I know that Sam from Australia, who originally suggested this show to us, he mentioned on the Facebook group that when he watched it again recently, he wasn't sure he couldn't quite work out who the murderer was trying to kill in the very first episode. Was it Craven or his daughter? Because, as we've probably suggested, the first police theory is that the guy was coming for Craven himself. And then as the show goes on, we think he may have actually been out to kill Emma. And then it swings back again. And it's difficult to work out. I confess I'm still not sure who was the original target, having watched it again.
Yes, I have an opinion on that, but I have to say it's not clear. I don't think there is any one definite answer to that question.
I feel so much is left undone.
Other people will continue the job. You'll be with me.
I still don't understand.
Dad, it's happened before, you know. Millions of years ago, when the Earth was cold, it looked as if life on the planet would cease to exist. But black flowers began to grow, multiplying across its...
There's also a question that I want to address on this, and maybe this goes in the negative side of things, and that is this now dated? And it's a tricky question. What do you think, Eamon?
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, I think on the plus side, you can see the £2 million budget up on screen. It's got very high production values, and it, you know, from that point of view, it looks great. I think for me, the only way it looks dated is in that now that the 1980s look dated to us. And I suppose that was the part that I noticed when I was watching it, that era that seemed so modern at the time now looks strangely dated to us. But I'm guessing that's not the elements that you're talking about, Brian.
Well, you do see some of that, and that didn't bother me too much in this. There are some things that are much more in your face about the 1980s look of things when they were made then. And this does look like it's from the 1980s, but that was reasonably subdued, I thought. But the other aspect to that, about this being dated, is the issues that it's tied to. Because the way that it approaches these nuclear issues, especially the nuclear waste issue, which is very central and important to this story, and it ties into these Gaia ideas and the Earth fighting back, and it ties into the technology things that Grogan and his bunch are working on. But it is playing off of some of these issues that are very much mid-1980s issues. And I think despite that, it still works very well. It's still very easy to see what they're talking about and very easy to understand those issues, even though they're not issues that are the same level of public concern that they were at the time. And I think, in a way, it is somewhat dated because of that, but I don't think it suffers for it. I think it's still very accessible and very easy to associate with what's going on and to associate with those issues, even if they are not as central and as prominent as they were in 1985.
Okay, well, that's interesting. There's also a slightly cavalier attitude to the handling of radioactive materials as well, isn't there?
Well, there is, but that's something that is deliberately meant to be unwise.
It's one of the features of the plot, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a definite issue. It is worth noting that, Eamon, you and I both remember the mid-80s and when these types of issues were much more to the forefront. So perhaps it would seem more dated to someone who doesn't remember those, or perhaps it would seem less dated to someone who doesn't remember those. I don't know. But it does have some aspects of being dated. I really don't think it suffers from them.
Right. Okay. Of course, we do have the other big question about the show, which is whether or not it is science fiction and whether or not it fits into the British Invaders remit. Now, I think, as you can probably tell, we've enjoyed watching it and talking about it. But it does raise the question which Sam posed for us himself as to whether or not it is genre television, Brian.
Yes. Well, it's an interesting question. And watching the first 5 episodes of Edge of Darkness, I would have said, no, this isn't science fiction or a related genre like fantasy or speculative fiction, horror, or something like that. I would not have said it belonged in that category. I would have said it's a great political thriller and a great piece about this grief and about nuclear issues and all of these different things, and a great piece of television, and I want to see the last episode. Seeing the sixth and final episode, there are some genre elements in there. You have these Gaia ideas and how those Gaia ideas are expressed in there being an imminent battle between nature and humanity and between Earth and the nuclear phenomenon that humanity has created. This is sort of a strong speculative fiction, science fiction slash fantasy type issue that comes in there. And you could argue throughout the whole serial that perhaps the ghost of Emma makes it some kind of supernatural show, if you believe that, in fact, it is a ghost of Emma. And again, that's something that's quite ambiguous. And some of the technology things that are featured, I believe, represent a kind of science fiction aspect as well. It's definitely something that is borderline, but I think because of these things and because of how it's forward-looking and dealing with the issues of the nuclear phenomenon, I think that makes it worth covering for British Invaders, because it's on the edge of science fiction and because it's related to science fiction. So I wouldn't want to be covering things of this type all of the time, if there were lots of things of this type, which there aren't. But I think it's well worth taking one discussion to look at something like this. So I would say, yes, it is in our remit, and it's sort of science fiction or speculative fiction.
Okay. I mean, I would agree with that. I'm very comfortable with us discussing it. I think it does fit in on the edges of our territory. You know, it's clearly such an important show, so it's worth talking about.
So we really have to talk about availability. If you want to get a hold of this and take a look at Edge of Darkness, how would you do that? Eamon, what's the situation in the UK?
Well, we had VHS releases back in the 80s, both in the UK and North America at the same time, 1987. But more relevant and up to date, we had a Region 2 DVD in 1999, but then we got a better release in 2003, which featured some of the extra features we've talked about as we've gone along. So clips from the various television shows that discussed Edge of Darkness. And I think most importantly, Brian, a documentary called Magnox, which was about the making of Edge of Darkness.
And it's quite good as well.
It is a good documentary, actually, and it features interviews with many of the creators we've talked about, some of whom are sadly no longer with us. So it's a good documentary. And in the UK, that Region 2 DVD is available on Amazon currently for £4, an absolute bargain price. It's going to be much cheaper than buying the Mel Gibson film when that comes out on DVD. And it's also available on the main rental site, Love Film, so it's easy to get hold of.
Yes, this one might be worth purchasing because there's definitely some rewatchability value to this. There's a lot there, and it's worth coming back to look at it more than once.
Absolutely. And in Region 1?
In North America, for Region 1, there is now a DVD release that came out recently, came out in the fall of 2009. It's available on Amazon.com for about $24 or so, and it is available on Netflix for rentals. So it should be relatively easy to find and get a hold of.
Very good. So our recommendations. I think we know how we're going to go on this one, Brian. What would you say?
I don't think there will be many surprises there. Edge of Darkness, this 1985 political thriller, was a great little serial. It feels like a serialized film in many ways, but has aspects of it being a television production as well. It has some outstanding acting, and it's a great story. The storytelling and the scripting and writing are all top-notch. It is not heavily a science fiction or speculative fiction show, but in parts of it, especially in the last episode, there are some little bits of science fiction ideas and things that fit into this. But if you enjoy thrillers and detective-type stories and this strong, very emotional type of acting, this is a really solid piece of drama. It's very good and highly recommended, really worth looking at.
Yes, absolutely. It's going to be a very positive double recommendation here. It's dark, it's complex, it's got brilliant acting throughout, it's got this most fantastic haunting theme tune. It's an almost perfect television production. And here in the UK, for only £4, it's an absolute bargain. So yes, please do, if you haven't seen it, do get hold of it and let us know what you think.
Yes, please do let us know. In summary, Edge of Darkness was a 1985 BBC serial, ran for 6 50-minute episodes. The main character, Ronald Craven, at the beginning of the story, loses his daughter to a murder and spends the balance of the story investigating exactly what happened. Not to seek revenge or get back at anyone, but simply to get closure and to get some catharsis and to get answers and to resolve some of the issues he's going through with his grief. And as this happens, we are introduced to things that his daughter was involved in, and we get into politics and shadowy corridors of power and nuclear issues, things that were being done with nuclear waste, with nuclear energy, potentially with nuclear weapons, and some very powerful, involved things happening that tied very definitely into some of the nuclear issues that were prominent at that time. And while this was mainly a thriller, there were some science fiction slash fantasy slash speculative fiction elements that came into play, especially towards the end.
Yep, it's very interesting. There are those elements of speculative fiction, and we really think you should check it out. Please come and find us and tell us what you think about the show, and in particular about Edge of Darkness. And please come back and join us next time when we are talking about Nigel Neal again. We will be discussing a show that he wrote in 1968 called The Year of the Sex Olympics. An interesting show that may have foreseen the advent of reality television.
Yes, a very strange and interesting show. That will be an interesting one to talk about. So you can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yep, thank you very much. Please join us next time. This is goodbye from Eamon in England.